Welcome to Church Treasury Training. I'll be covering general church treasurer tasks and knowledge rather than specific computer program details. If you need help with that, we do have treasurer's manuals here that you can take if you don't already have one. They haven't been updated since the last time I made them, so if you already have one, I don't have enough to go around, so please don't take one. Sure. Okay. We'll be covering the general weekly, monthly, and yearly treasury tasks, laws that govern charities and specifically affect church finances, and then church policies. And at the end, we'll have a question and answer session. If you have any questions regarding the slide that we're currently on, feel free to ask them, but if it's an unrelated question, then please save it until the end. All right. I've broken down the tasks of the treasurer into how frequently you need to do them, weekly, monthly, and on the following slide, they'll be yearly. All right, so the weekly tasks mostly revolve around offerings, collecting them, counting them, depositing them. The treasurer is in charge of the procedures for handling the offerings. The treasurer doesn't necessarily have to count them. It's technically better if the treasurer doesn't handle the cash and do the entries. But in the small church, you may be one of only a few people who can deal with the cash. In that case, you need to get an assistant to count it with you. Perhaps you can delegate to the assistant to make deposits to the bank. And then usually there are bills to pay during the week or expense claims from church members who've bought things for the church to reimburse. Then on a monthly basis, if your church is enrolled in Adventist Giving Online, where people donate using a credit card on the internet, you'll get those reports monthly. So at the end of the month, you pull a report for that, for all the donations that were made during that month, and then you make those entries. You make entries for all of the donations if you don't do that on a weekly basis. Make entries for all of the checks. And when you get the bank statement from the bank, it needs to be reconciled. And briefly, the bank reconciliation process is the one in which you match your records that you've kept in ChurchPal to the records on the bank statement. And also file documents. That you could do whenever you get a piece of paper, but if you want to leave it for a month, it doesn't really matter. Then when you finish entering all the information in the church accounting software called ChurchPal, then you'll need to transmit it to us at the conference. We also need that information. All of this is automatic within the program itself. And also on a probably monthly basis, you'll present financial reports to the board. Then at the end of the year, at year end, part of the year end procedures include checking to see that any checks you've written to vendors or to church members have been cashed. Checks older than 6 months have to be voided, and then you'd have to reissue it and re-enter the check for that. Then the deadline for you to submit your information to us at the conference is January 10. This is because we have to submit information to the union not very long after. So throughout the rest of the year, we can let you be a bit late in submitting information to us, but by the end of the year, we need it January 10. Then another thing that you'll probably do yearly is present the audit report when you get it from us to the board. Actually, this will probably be every 2 years unless you're in a very big church, because the churches are on a two-year audit schedule. So every 2 years, one of us will come by or ask you to mail your documents in. We'll do the audit, send you a report, and then you take the report to the board. Basically, you can read the cover letter. And if the board has any more questions, then there are details included in the report package. Something that you would do in January and February is print donation receipts and hand them out to donors. one note about this. I would recommend waiting until you are certain that no checks have bounced. So usually you'll receive notice from the bank if a check has bounced, a donor's check has bounced. But if the bank has an address on file that's like the church's mailing address or something that's not yours, then wait until you get the January bank statement. This is because if the donor's check that they gave in December, if that bounces in January, then the CRA considers that they have not actually made the donation in December, and to give them a tax receipt for it is illegal. Okay, another thing to do yearly is file a GST rebate claim. Technically you can do it twice a year. It's easier to remember if you do it once a year. You will have to file two forms though, one for every 6 month period within the year that you're covering. Okay, that was all of the treasurer tasks, generally speaking. Anyone have any questions about those? Okay, I will move on to Canadian laws regarding church finances. Mostly I will cover donations that the church might make to other charities within Canada, donations they wish to make outside of Canada, and then donations to individuals. Generally speaking, the church is allowed to donate to other registered Canadian charities. They must be registered with the CRA. The CRA does keep a list that you can search to see if the organization you wish to donate to is registered. The other charity should have purposes that are in harmony with our churches, which is relief of poverty and education and religious, propagation, practice of our religion. If the church board takes a vote that the church is going to donate this money to these charities, then you may issue a tax receipt to any of your church's donors who donate for this charity. Otherwise, sure. The church board, if the church wishes to donate money to another charity, the church board should take a vote on it.
Yeah, they must be in harmony, and you gave us some.
Oh, yes, okay. The charitable purposes of our church, this is only written on the charity application when the church first registers for a charity number. In most cases, your churches have been registered for decades. The charity purposes are relief of poverty, education, and religious purposes. So if the other charity has purposes that coincide with one of those, then generally speaking, it's okay to donate to them. The church board, they should take a motion to donate money to this other charity that you wish to donate to. And once they do so, then members who donate to the church say you're donating to the Red Cross. So members who donate to the church saying Red Cross, then you may enter that donation as usual and issue a tax receipt for them. Otherwise, it's probably best if you tell donors, just donate straight to this other charity. Don't send it through the church. They're going to get a tax receipt anyway, just not from the church.
Adra's a good example.
Yeah, Adra is a really popular one. They're sort of affiliated with us because they're Adventist, but they are a different charity. So the CRA, the Canada Revenue Agency, considers them a separate organization, not related to us at all, as far as they're concerned. So technically speaking, if donors wish to give to ADRA, they should send the money straight to ADRA. But because they are closely associated with the Adventist Church, it's generally considered that the church will support them. So that when donors write ADRA on their tithe envelope, then you can receipt that as a normal donation and just send the money on later. The conference also has offering codes for that, so the process to send the money to ADRA is automatic. You don't have to especially write a check to ADRA, usually. Okay, Now, donations outside of Canada to organizations outside of Canada. In general, the answer is you may not. This is part of anti-terrorism legislation that's probably 15 years old by now. It's a little bit slow in getting down to the general public for them to understand this. There are a few organizations in the U.S. that we as Canadian charities may donate to. Mostly they're universities. Andrews University, Loma Linda, a few others. There's a list somewhere on the CRA website, so if you need to know, please ask one of us. But generally speaking, even if they're Adventist, you may not, the church may not send a donation to any of those organizations. Individuals may donate to anyone they choose. So if an individual wishes to support a mission in the Philippines, for instance, they can send the money there, no problem. But they cannot give the money to the church and ask the church to send the money to the Philippines, then expect a tax receipt from the church for this donation. First of all, the church is not allowed to give a tax receipt for it because it's not a project of the church's, and as far as the CRA is concerned, this mission in the Philippines is not related to the church's activities here. Second of all, it's in the Philippines. To send the money outside of the country is not permissible. If the church wishes to sponsor a mission in another country, it's possible to set up an agency agreement. This is a formal agreement signed by both the church and whoever's operating the mission overseas to use the church's money to do mission work. It's a lot of red tape, so please think carefully before you try to get into this. Okay. Donations to individuals are generally also prohibited, but there are exceptions for if the church wishes to assist a needy person or a student who needs help with their tuition. In these cases, the church should already have funds like the Benevolent or the Poor Fund or Worthy Student Fund established. The church board should have in place a procedure whereby people can apply to use money from these funds. So they have conditions or criteria that the applicants need to meet and a procedure that the applicants can follow to apply for the money. Then anybody who wishes to make use of any of this money should apply through the church board. Now, these funds must be open to everyone, not just church members or relative of church members, everybody. You don't have to advertise that the church has a benevolent fund, but if someone walks in off the street and wants money from it, put them through the process and they can have the money. Law forbids us to keep money away from people who ask and go through the proper procedure. There was something else I wanted to say about this. Oh yeah, this applies also to the bereavement fund that I notice on many churches' books. Often when a church member's relative dies or when a church member themselves dies, the family will receive some money from the church. This should also be put through the same procedure. I notice that mostly it's members that receive payments from bereavement funds, and I just want to say now this is a risky thing to do. If the CRA looks at the books and sees that mostly members are being paid out of this fund, they could fine the church and the members. It's what they call private benevolence, giving money from a church to the church's own members, and they prohibit it. Okay, now loans to individuals. Needy individuals are otherwise strictly prohibited. That's what the banks are for. The church can give them money if they go through the right process, but they may not lend it to them. Okay, internal controls. Scott, if you'd hand out those pieces of paper now. Internal controls exist to make sure that money is handled correctly, expenses are paid correctly, and that money doesn't go missing. they're most important when handling cash or paying cash out, checks. So when you collect cash in offerings, the controls around that usually involve having two people present when the cash is counted, and document how much they've counted. What Scott's handing out right now is the offering, well, he's handing out the expense claim form, but what you have in your hand is the offering count sheet. This is a sample form that you can use when counting offerings.
This is the new sheet now that you provide us now?
Yeah.
Don't you have this?
Yeah, that's a sample that you have.
Record.
Yeah, so when you and whoever you ask to assist you counts the offering that you collect for the week, fill out one of these forms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got separate columns for the loose offerings for Sabbath school, the divine service, anything that you find in envelopes, and a total column. And then it's got lots of spaces for initials. Or signatures, or just plain old names. Probably the names of the counting team is best, because you don't have to know the person then to figure out whose signature it is. You'll file this offering count sheet with the envelopes for that week when you make up your monthly file. This sheet helps us when we audit your church to see that, yes, you do have two people counting the offering, and that the correct amount of offering is going into the bank. Because if we look on the bank statement, we see the deposit for that week's collection, and we look at that sheet, and we see that they come to the same total amount. If they do not match, then we know there are problems, potentially. Now, usually when they mismatch, it's random. So the amount that went into the bank is either more or less than... Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. It's not always less or always more. So that's okay. We will speak to you about it and ask you to please count the offering correctly. But if we see that the offering that goes into the bank is consistently less than what's on the sheet, it's an indication that some cash is leaving in someone's pocket. All right, the other page that you have is an expense claim form. There are two forms on one page. This is for use when members spend money for the church. They buy potluck supplies or something, and then they wish to be reimbursed. Please have your members fill this form out. If we see just a receipt in the files, we have no proof that the person you wrote the check to was the one who actually paid the money, or really no proof what it was for. So this document can help us figure out, okay, so I see styrofoam plates, lettuce, and then they write on the form, yes, this is potluck supplies. So yeah, okay, we can understand the expense and consider it reasonable. Yes?
Yeah, but what if you have the receipt? If I say one of the members buys some stuff for potluck, let's say, I don't give any receipt, but they bring me the receipt. Mm-hmm. See, that's what I paint. I spend like 20 bucks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't need this. Do I need this still?
The
receipt. So yeah,
it's a good idea if you can get them at least to sign it, to say that yes, you repaid them the money.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and then you'll file that with the other documents for that expense. Another thing I want to touch on is phone expenses. Pastors sometimes ask for reimbursement for their phones. They use them quite a lot. Scott, would you talk about that?
Sure. They use phones. Yeah, if your church does pay out phone expenses, we do that at the conference level. The CRA's regulations on that is you're allowed to pay the fixed total of the phone bill, a reasonable amount.
Is that the monthly plan amount?
The fixed total of their monthly plan. So you cannot pay the additional costs. So if they have like extra long distance charges or things like that, those are not to be reimbursed. It's just the fixed total of their phone bill. So maybe they have like a $65 plan per month or something. So you don't have to reimburse the whole thing, of course. Some churches just choose to do like a small portion. But if you do reimburse, you also need to keep a copy of that phone bill on file. showing the amount so that we can see how much of the phone is being reimbursed. The reason for that is if we don't do it as an expense, it's considered a taxable benefit, and then we need to tax them for the money that they receive.
So
because it's considered salary. What we tell you to do is to get a copy of their phone bill, keep it on file with each month, and then make sure you're busy. I should look up that.
Because OCHA board has voted a certain amount for the pastors, for their phone bill.
Yeah.
So automatically, every month, I would write a check, or maybe let's say 3 months or whatever, write a check for that amount.
Yeah.
But I never get the phone bill.
Yeah, in that case, it's by law, it would be considered a taxable benefit, and we need to tax them for that.
So how would you get that information?
To tax them? I think it's better if we just do it as a reimbursement, because otherwise they won't be getting their full. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So if we need to, we can talk to them about that and explain how it works.
So, one of our pastors has one plan with himself and his wife.
Yeah.
So that is really difficult to kind of, do it.
Yeah.
So this is why our church has decided we just give them a flat amount for their bills.
And a flat amount is okay.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to pay the full portion. You can just pay a portion of the portion.
So then that's why we have been asking for receipts.
Yeah.
Because this is what was approved by the board for them to get every month.
Yeah. We can go the tax route. It's not as good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as beneficial for them or the church, because then we have more money going to taxes, I guess.
Yes.
So the best thing to do would be get to...
So now if I get the bill from them, I'm not sure what...
You don't need the detail.
You don't need the details, just like the first page.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what portion of the bill that I would have to
just
apply the amount to.
Yeah, it'll just be for the... Like if they have a $60 or $120 plan, I mean, if they're just getting $50 a month, we can see that, this $50 covers this portion of this... And it's a reasonable amount. So basically you're making a judgment call saying, yes, this plan is for two people, we're paying this portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be fine.
I'm sorry, I'm not
Yeah.
I guess our church is chintzy, we won't pay anything.
Yeah, there's a few churches that do, most don't. There's a few people, and it's partly based on it's partly based on what they do for work, because I know at the conference office, there's a few people that do get phone reimbursement, because they have their phone and they travel all the time and stuff like that, but not all of us have that.
Generally speaking, if someone doesn't give you receipts or some kind of supporting documentation, you should not pay them back. It can lead to hard feelings if they lose receipts, but...
Yeah.
We're taking no laundry.
Exactly.
That's the standard we live by. We photocopy our... I take photos of my receipts up right away.
Mm-hmm.
So then I lose them. Photocopies are okay. If people are getting you copies of receipts and that, that's fine to keep that on file.
Technically.
That would be a good one. Did you have that on the list of things to talk about?
No, this would be a good place to do so, though.
With the evangelism expenses, you apply through George, through the evangelism committee for evangelistic series, and they approve you for so much funds, and the conference reimburses 65% of your actual funds spent up to that certain amount. When we process that at the office, what we need is a photocopy of all of the expenses that you had, so that we can go through and verify that those expenses happened, they were all part of the series, and then we'll issue a check for the amount, 65% of that amount, up to the approved. So that's one of the cases where we don't actually want to see your original receipts. You need to keep those there in your files, because when we do the audit, we'll need to see them in the month. But you can make a photo, as they come in, you can just make a photocopy of them and stick them into your evangelism file, and then when you're done, you can fill out the little form and then send that whole stack of stuff to us, and we'll send you some nice big check.
Okay, one thing I forgot to mention with offering counting, these two individuals who count should not be related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Husband and wife? Well, no. They're
married people are just one person.
Yeah. Parent and child also kind of related. They shouldn't be related. It makes it a little less likely that there will be fraud.
Yeah. It's the same with on the board too, because for the churches that we do need to declare on the 230-10, all of the board members and that, they look and see, like, are they related and are they at arms? Like, even close business ties, I think in this case would apply.
Yeah.
So if two people are like partners in a business, they probably shouldn't be the two people counting the offering type of thing, because that would also be considered a very close relationship. And government-wise, when we send the board documents in with them, they look and they say, like, there's a minimum amount of people that have to meet. You have to meet, I think, 50% has to be not at arm's length with each other type of thing, or else there's problems.
Yeah. Okay. My note here says payments to individuals board approved. I think that's talking about say financial aid payments, or these student payments. As I said earlier, there should be procedures and guidelines for them to follow when applying that, but in each case there should be a board motion approving it.
And not the board motion should be kept in file.
Yeah, a printed copy. Yeah.
We have examples. So if your church doesn't have a benevolence fund policy, we have an example of stuff that you can get from us from the office, and we can, yeah, so you can work with them. Actually, I think the one example we have is from D.C.
Okay.
Mr. Williams said the treasurer is the one who has the most power.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he is. If you have any questions, generally speaking, just ask us. Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, if you forget everything, just remember that if you have a question or anything, just call us, because we don't always know, but we can find out. And so that's pretty much what we're here for.
Yeah, that's why we're paid a salary.
Day to day, week to week, you know, they become routine and you can just do them. But anytime something falls out of that routine, just give us a call and we'll help you. It's good. It's good. It helps you. It helps us too, because then we learn things.
Okay, let me just mention loose offerings. Conference policy requires that offerings be, how do I say, designated for the project, mission, project, whatever, listed on the offering calendar. I see in some cases boards have taken motions to keep all loose offerings at the local level. This is not permitted. We are a world church and we need to support these global projects. The one person who needs to hear this is not here. So these offerings, they need to be announced correctly in church, because whatever it's announced for, that's legally what the offering must go to. So if by accident someone announces local church budget, well, no matter what the offering calendar says, it's got to go to local church budget. Don't make that mistake. If that happens a lot, we're going to get suspicious.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Yeah, it's funds, once they're designated for a purpose, one thing that's good to know, you don't have to, the church is not obligated to receive funds that are given to it. The church can say, no, we don't want to accept these funds based on their designation. For whatever reason, you don't have to accept the funds. Once you do accept funds that are designated for a specific purpose, they must be used for that purpose. There is no way around it. That is the law. And I think there's only ever been maybe two court cases that have ever changed the designation of an offering. And I think it had to do with after the person was dead and stuff like that. It's pretty much, once it's designated, that's the purpose. So one of the things to take note when you have your accounts on your books, the names, as you name them, need to be very general names. You don't want to have a very specific, like, on, like, for example, you were going to do, like,
New carpet
for installation on March 23, or something, like, super specific, because that's all you can use that for. You want a general name for it that says, like, building improvements. That way, once the carpet is in, you can then use whatever funds are left for another building improvement. What's even a better step beyond that is to encourage your members just to donate funds to the church family budget. Because then they can go to any place that the board sees needs funds throughout your local church. That is by far the best way, rather than having members designate the specific lines on your church books, if they just designate to the church family budget, and you can encourage them just to donate there and that the funds will be used to support these ministries. That's a very healthy way to operate your finances, because we do see lots of churches, even for small churches with building funds, there's a number of small churches that have a good chunk of change in a building fund, but it's going to take them quite a few more years to get to the point where they can actually buy a building, where they'll find a building where their membership will be able to support the new building, and those funds are kind of tied up right now, so they can't use them for anything else. And I know there was discussion even here like a few months ago, how can we do better, because there's thousands and thousands of dollars in building funds in churches, right? And they're looking at ways that maybe we could use those funds to make things happen sooner rather than having a church just have those funds sit there for so long type of thing.
So what's the option? You just put it in church fund or church budget?
If people donate specifically to the building fund, the funds have to stay there. If the funds are donated to the church family budget and then a portion of those go to the building fund, those funds can then later be used for something else if needed. So then the board has the flexibility to move those funds around. But if you receive one, because church family budget is generally understood as it goes to the entire operations of the local church.
Right.
That's its designation. That's why you can use the funds anywhere. The one that's for a specific purpose, then that's the only thing you can use it for.
If that purpose is completed, then the funds are left over.
Then they just...
That they can by board action.
You cannot move those funds anywhere.
Unless you have a notice somewhere. Yeah.
There's two exceptions. One is there's a few churches, and maybe yours does it, that have a designated giving policy. If you ever run Andrew's website, they have a designated giving policy now that very clearly says, and it needs to be like on the tithe envelopes posted all around the church in your bulletin and announced that when the project is done, if there are funds left over, they may be used for other purposes. The second option is to find another charity that's doing what this project was specified to be doing and transfer those funds, give those funds to that charity. We were just doing that with talking to one church about that the other day, where they have like $50 sitting in an account. And like, you just need to donate it to like this charity, and then it's on your books and type of thing. So. Yeah, there is a few churches that have done, and we do have in the audit report a sample of designated giving policy. We can give you that. It'll take a few years before, of course, because you'll still have restricted funds now, but all new funds you receive would, in that case, be then technically not restricted once the project is done.
So we've had that policy for years.
Yeah, and that's great. Yeah, that's why that'd be great if we did that for all of our churches at some point. It'd be good to do. And part of it's just educating the donors as well, and people that give money. And if you've been doing it for a long time, then everyone just kind of knows and understands this is how it works. So.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing about designated funds that donors give to. Occasionally I hear of donor, they give money for something and then they change their mind later, call the treasurer up and say, oh, can I change my mind? Could you put this $50? I donated that for church budget. I want that to go to evangelism instead. They're not allowed to do that. In no case ever are they allowed to change their minds. Once the church has the money, I think the CRA considers that it belongs to the government in care of the church. So,
if a church were to close down, those funds go one of two places. They have to go either to the government or to a charity of the same purpose, basically. Basically, all the funds are treated as restricted, and they either the government takes them or they go to it. In this case, another church.
Okay. Last few policies that I want to cover are honoraria and mission trips. Honorariums for anybody in the church, really. Visiting speakers, church officers. Sometimes a church will give their treasurer a gift to recognize their service throughout the year, because treasurers work hard. The maximum for anybody is $500 per year. So a visiting speaker, doesn't matter if they stay 3 days or 3 weeks, $500.
I think, and that would include them working at other places.
Yeah, I think so. Now, if say, this usually applies to visiting speakers, if they are non-Canadian, then if the church wishes to pay the money, the conference office has to do it because they get taxed on it. And then we have to send the money to the CRA.
Kim takes care of all that paperwork for the out-of-country speakers, non-resident speakers.
Yeah.
We can have you guys look after that.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, all the day-to-day stuff, it's very straightforward. It's very routine when you start doing some of these other things. There's other laws and procedures, and in Canada, our laws are a lot more...
Very restrictive. You can do anything in the States. Here, we got to follow the rules.
Yeah. So, just give us a call, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, do you want to talk about the mission trips?
Honorariums, we were going to mention...
Come back to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I was gonna say, if you're doing an honorarium, it's far better to reimburse expenses than to do an honorarium. Because honorariums, of course, follow like phone reimbursement versus just giving a person that. It's basically taxable versus non-taxable. So if you go the route with a speaker of just reimbursing mileage, then you don't have any tax implications and you're just reimbursing mileage for their drive here.
So if you decide to give, if you have any speaker that come from another country and they finish, if you have to give the $500, have to be for sure through the conference.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, so I cannot give like the $500 and they sign me receipt, like sign me.
Has to come through the conference.
Before it should be that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, some of these rules are what I guess anti-terrorism.
Yeah, that's not exactly new, but there are obscure rules.
Mm-hmm.
We only learned about some of these recently.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, doing the reimbursement of expenses, mileage, like let's say the speaker's coming from like traveling 150 kilometers or something, then you could reimburse their, say at 24 cents a kilometer, that would be, I'm not sure what, but 100.
I don't know, there's a maximum that the CRA says is a reasonable rate of expense of reimbursement for mileage. I think it's 54 cents this year. Yeah, it changes year to year.
And then there's different categories, and the church has that, and then there's like, I was going to ask Keith before I came, but I forgot. Because we reimburse sometimes at 24 cents.
The rate goes down after so many kilometers.
And the rate goes down
yeah.
after so many
kilometers. Yeah, you don't have to use the maximum rate.
Unless you're driving the vehicle constantly.
This college
doesn't apply for somebody coming to speak at a weekend.
And usually what we like to see, especially if it's an honorarium, when they receive the money, you need to have a form that they sign.
Yeah, oops, you can use that expense claim form. Yeah, if they're from out of the country, it's got to come through the conference, and so you won't need that at all. But anyone else... Yeah, there needs to be some kind of supporting document for every transaction you have. Offering collections, this is why I have you fill out a count sheet for loose offering, because otherwise there's no piece of paper telling us where this money came from, how much it was, what it's for.
Pretty much there's a piece of paper and a signature, one or two signatures on everything.
Well, actually, it is Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll get you more copies. Yeah, if you need more copies of any of what I gave you, just contact us.
Thank you. So we have an exhaust in the system for the deposit card. So we should attest this copy as well as the exhaust copy when we have a deposit. Is it?
When you file your own documents, you mean?
Yes. For the deposit, we have an exhaust card.
Yeah.
So we have a printout from the Excel sheet. So you want us to put two copies, like that copy and
Well, the Excel sheet is okay, but it's not signed by two people.
We sign two people.
Do you just type their names in or actually sign with a pen? Sign it, okay. Yeah, as long as you sign with a pen. Yeah. No, if you type their names in, that's not really good enough. You could type anybody's name in.
This one is more clear.
That's a sample. Yeah. This sheet is also a sample. You don't have to use this one.
Some churches have their own.
Yes. If you have your own and it does the job, that's fine. Just make sure you sign it.
If you like yours better, you can send us a copy of it.
Yeah, we'll take your form. We're always looking to improve ours.
That's
a
good one. Yeah, go
ahead. Okay, we have the expense claim form. I see in this paper there's two forms. Do you have this copy or just like?
No, that's just so that you can save a few trees. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
You can use a full page if you like, no problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Mission trips?
Yep.
Okay. Mission trips, when you do a mission trip, all expenses, one thing to note, everything has to be documented and submitted to the government for a mission trip. So when we fill in the tax form at the year, we need a full list of what all the expenses were, how much the totals were. We have to tell the government which countries you went to, how much you spent, how much was spent on this, how many people were volunteers, if there was any paid people. One of the most important things about a mission trip is that you, as a church board, are responsible for the project and paying for the expenses on that trip. It can't be. Because again, it's illegal to donate funds outside the country. So the reason a mission trip works is because it's one of your own projects and you control everything about that project and what goes on. So if, for example, you do go to the Philippines and let's say you build a church, you go there, you take your funds, you buy the materials, you do the work on the church, or you hire people to do the work on the church, but it's your project and you're in control of it. Or, I mean, ideally you should be working with the local conference there too. But in the end, it needs to be your project and Canadian controlled. That's what the government wants to see. And we can, if you are doing a mission trip and you want to want more details on that, actually probably Eric Raj would be a really good person to speak to. Because they do projects outside of Canada all the time, and so they're doing agency agreements and their own projects and stuff like that. All the time, so they're very familiar with the procedures that need to be followed when you're doing a trip. The conference mission trip this year is actually being done to the Edmonton Filipino Church. Yep.
You still have to go down every year to ensure it's still...
There are things, monitoring, follow-up, stuff like that, yeah. Take lots of pictures. I mean, I've been on lots of mission trips down to Belize, and so I kind of understand how the... You have your funds, and I mean, the reality is when you get back your funds that you spent and the receipts that you collect, they never match. Like, it's as much as we've tried, it's just like we don't know what happened. There's exchange rates you deal with. Yeah, exactly. There's exchange rates you deal with. You're usually probably carrying thousands or tens of thousands of dollars of cash with you, and different things like that. So, I mean, it's a risky thing, but it's also a very beneficial thing to the people there. So, basically, we just need to, if you are doing one, I mean, give us a call and we can put you in contact with some people just to talk through and just make sure that there's a good understanding of the proper way the government wants to see projects happen. Because they don't want to see things not happening. They want to see things happen, but they just have, these are the guidelines that we want to see so that we can clearly say this money is going from here to there and being used for a beneficial purpose for the people. If you're going down and building like a multiplex center or something that the people in the community will just be doing weddings and all sorts of different things like that, the government's not going to look very favorably on that. And they're going to probably ask to shut the project down. But if you're going there to build a school or provide education or medical, and there's a benefit to the people in the area. Very much the same kind of work that you're doing here in your local community, doing there would be kind of the expectation. Yeah, And then we have to record them. We have to report everything to the government.
And
just for that one, not like the evangelism one, we need to see all your copy of all your receipts and stuff like that. With the mission trip one, just an Excel spreadsheet that details all of your expenses. They can even be grouped into categories, so we don't need to see every single detail type of thing. We just need to see an overall picture of what happened.
And that's everything that we intended to cover. So if anyone has any questions about anything, look out. Yeah. If you have any questions about anything that we covered, that we didn't cover.
We're going to be sending out just a quick thing on the T-3010, where we'll be sending out a questionnaire shortly with the information we need to submit to the government. And if you did do a mission trip, we'll send you another form that you can fill out too. Just so you're aware that's coming out soon.
And since at Christmas time, we'd like to give out Safeway gift cards to non-Adventists as well as Adventists. So how does that go through the church treasury?
Community services.
Pardon me?
Through the community services.
Yeah.
Through the community services.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gift cards, the government considers gift cards the same as cash.
Okay.
Just as a random bit of information on that. But it would be kind of a part of your community service bill, a benevolence fund type of project. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ish, yeah.
Yeah. Giving them out randomly is a little...
Yeah, best thing to do is if you have a board action and saying this is the project and what you're doing type of thing. Very important, especially, I'm just on a random thing on insurance and stuff like that. Any trips you take, anytime people are, like even just sending some of your kids from your church to the youth rally, heard a teen youth rally thing happening in a couple of weeks, that needs to be board approved action. You should have all their names listed there as to who's going, and then that's when risk management coverage and insurance and all that stuff kicks in. So everything needs to go through the board on projects like that. So
sure
needs to go through. And then risk management, because risk management provides all their insurance coverage and stuff like that. So on trips and stuff like that for liability. Per year, that's the maximum amount the person's allowed to receive before it becomes a taxable benefit. So anything over the 500, we have to process as taxable, and we have to issue T4 forms. But the government or Canadian resident makes an exception that says the first 500 is non-taxable. Yeah. After that, the taxes kick in, and the government gets a cut.
Okay, so it's pay every person.
It's the CRA. When the $500 is the CRA threshold for when taxes kick in. And when you go to the conference, have to start issuing tax form, T4 slips for that person. So that's why we say keep it under that amount, so that we don't have to do that.
It's too bad Mr. Duffy didn't hold himself to the $50.
He probably paid taxes and all of those things. Yeah, this is our sample, but you probably have something like that at your church for the restricted, what do we call this?
Designated giving policy?
Designated giving policy.